This is the Authentic Persuasion Show. Hey, everybody. Welcome to part two of a conversation about to have with Kelly Decker. We just finished the official one. If you haven't checked that out, if you're just tuning in for this one, make sure to check out the part one of our conversation. We talked a lot about debt, collections, the overlap with sales, empathy, so many different things that came up. And that was fun. I really enjoyed it. How was the conversation for you on that first
part? It was great. Being in the debt relief space now and focusing on that for the last 2.5 years, going back to my collections experience, it's a good memory.
Yeah, that's great. So with that, so we talked a lot about collections, obviously those principles, which I loved. It wasn't even prompted this way, but it's like how universal those apply to anything. Where do you see some of that still missing, or what needs in the debt space, right? So people who are getting into debt programs like debt management, debt settlement, consumer counseling, things like that, from where you're at now, where do you see that industry still needs some of these lessons?
So debt relief, interestingly, and the broad spectrum, debt settlement, consumer credit counseling, debt resolution programs, they have been much more customer centric because they're selling a product. So they have, and because we work in there's two different houses in the debt settlement or the debt relief spectrum. You have the front end, which is the sales and marketing and that part of it. And like I said, because we're actually selling a product or service, we have to have all of the sales methodologies and things at heart, because we need to, the customer acquisition is the most expensive thing out there. So if we're not acquiring customers, then we don't have any bills to settle or resolve. So so it's really important for us to be in front of the customers, the folks who need debt relief, folks who feel like they're up against a wall. And most of the people that come to debt relief, some of them haven't even missed the payment yet, but they can see the tsunami wave coming. And I can see, and you can probably, we all collectively can see the big tsunami coming with the macroeconomic things going out in the world. You have inflation, price of gas, everything's going a little wild right now. So you already can see folks have dipped into their savings. We had highest levels of savings ever during COVID period. And now that savings has dwindled, nothing is left. People are going to start relying on credit. We're going to have people who get into situations where, when we see recession coming, you also expect job loss. So, these folks are going to start leaning on their credit. They're going to start taking out loans. Cars are going to start being repossessed. Foreclosures will happen. The programs like ours need to be there for folks to avoid bankruptcy. The debt settlement and debt relief in as a whole has been kind of has had the same trajectory as collections, not as wide in the experience time wise, but there was a wild west of debt relief for a long time pre 2010. You had companies who were bringing in clients, having them give them money and paying them fees and not doing anything, not settling out any of their accounts,
not answering their phone, anything. I remember those days.
Obviously when that happens, regulations have to come, tighten up the industry, give rules where there weren't rules before. And that has really helped change the industry. But unfortunately, as we know with debt collections, once you have a stigma about a particular industry, that stigma is very hard to shake. In my where I, in my role at Beyond Finance, is interfacing with creditors, lenders, debt buyers, collection agencies, attorneys, who are the ones who are actually collecting these bills of our clients. So it's a little bit of a different, conversation that I'm having with them than the sales guys and the marketing folks and our customer service are having with the clients. I'm, having to bridge this gap of, we think this is a scam. We think that you're not actually doing anything for this customer. We think that you're putting them in a worse place than they were before. And that's just not the case. And having to, bring those walls down and crack through some people who are just old institutionalized folks who have been at these companies for long periods of times, who've had these feelings about debt settlement and debt relief as a whole. It's been a challenge trying to get folks to realize that not only is it a legitimate business and we're not going anywhere, but we are doing a service for people. We are helping them avoid bankruptcy. We're helping them save years of stress and frustration and not being 100% present in their life because they have, all of this stuff, this big pile of stuff behind them. I remember there was a commercial back in like the 90s. I don't watch cable TV, so it's been a long time. So it's an old commercial. But I remember the guy, like, he's mowing his lawn and he's walking across his lawn and they're like, "How are you today?" And he's like, "I'm in debt up to my eyeballs." Like, he's so happy about it, right? And, that guy is not living in the present. If you have so much debt amassed, you have a family, you have a community, you have things and people that need your attention, but your attention is elsewhere. And I really think that that's something that's not addressed when we talk about, society as a whole, how people are doing financially and what the health and mental health impact is.
For sure. One of the things that you mentioned in the first part was about, a lot of, especially collection companies, but we can expand this to the debt relief side as well, that they don't have a lot of technology, especially for like omni-channel, multiple parts. Where else do you see companies struggle with the sales operation side, right? Like a lot of companies I see are founded by somebody who's good at the sales and enrollment side, and they just bank on that versus the systems and processes.
The nice thing about debt relief is, which is a little bit different from the growing up of debt collections, is that debt relief kind of came into existence with better technologies, better options to contact people, right? So when we're signing folks up, we're getting their permission to email them, text them. They sign into a portal. We communicate with them through that. There's an app that they can download. We're debt relief is very omni-channel, which is, another thing that I kind of try to tell these banks and creditors and lenders, like, I know we're not collecting bills, but we could be doing better for you because we can reach your customers where they want to be reached. They don't have to break the relationship that they have with you, where you're selling the business, the account, or you're placing it with a third party agency or what have you. So the bank, the creditor, the lender actually gets to hold on to that relationship, which is what most of our clients do want. They don't want to, break all of the relationships with their banks or creditors or lenders. They're just in a position that they need help. It's not permanent. It's most likely temporary. But if they don't fix it now, it's just going to lead to a worse scenario then. With regard to sales for the debt settlement or for the debt relief side, again, because we're in, at least in my case, I can't speak for all the debt settlement companies in the country, but most cases, the big players in the space are dealing with, high technology folks. We're fintech type companies. So we're reaching people wherever they can be reached, we're reaching out to them.
Yeah, and I think that's fascinating what you're talking about too, which is when the industry was born is basically what you're saying, and then what technology was there and how it was built by people who had the technology available versus collections, which has been around forever. And I look at other industries, let's say like auto dealerships and auto sales that have been around forever, and so many of them have trouble changing and adopting because this is the way we've always done it. This is what we know. This is what we're comfortable with. And we know this works. So why would we ever change it, even if it's not working? Because the consumers have changed. And it's fascinating because when you put it that way, my brain instantly thinks of like future, like younger generations of people and what they grow up with, right? Like you and I grew up maybe no internet, no cable, and then that's now a thing, and some people are good at adapting to it and adopting it or not. And then if you look at younger generations, right, like anybody who's a teen right now, they're most likely a master of technology, and they're just all over the place, and they know how to use lots of things, and it's like second nature to them because it's all they've known from, you know, growing up. And it's interesting to apply that principle to an industry relative to when they were born.
Yeah, collections, the FDCPA was written, I think, in the 70s, and it literally refers to, like, telegram as a means of communication. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and the same thing with the TCPA, which is on, you know, on the telemarketing side, right? It references fax in there as well, because it was written, I think, in the 80s or the 90s, and it's just like, again, you know, when was that created, and then how has things evolved, and then what applies and what doesn't. So one other part that I wanted to ask you here in this second after show portion, something completely different that I think is fascinating about what you're focused on. So you have this debt collection history, you have the debt relief side that you're focused on now, and then you and your husband also have a coffee business, which I think is fascinating. And so what have you learned about business? What have you taken from what you know in the past or you've learned from these other industries? What applies? Like, what kind of universal stuff is there? And you know, and talk about your coffee business for a little bit, because I'm super fascinated how you have these two different sides of what you're focused on.
Jason, I have a lot of things that I focus on. I wear a lot of hats. I like to do a lot of things. Coffee has become one of those things. So my husband and I really got into coffee, kind of became coffee snobs, if you will. We met at a collection agency almost 20 years ago now. So, you know, we've worked together for the entire time we've known each other. We worked together very well. So it was only natural that we had wanted to, build our own business. And we were happy to continue working our 40-hour-a-week jobs and, you know, have this kind of running in the background. We wanted to just have like a retail, online commerce, type of, you know, just a brand of coffee, just selling it in the background, pay a consultant to do it. Talk to the consultant. The consultant's like, we talk to him for about a year, and we get to the point where he's like, I actually have another business, the family business that I'm going to go and step away and do. It's booming right now. And I'm actually going to sell this coffee business. I have like 4 clients, 1 medium-sized coffee shop in the Tampa area. And he's like, I know you guys are interested, so I just kind of wanted to see if you guys might be interested in buying everything, buying the company, assets, if you will. And we were like, what else are we doing? Let's try it. Let's give it a whirl. The thing that has bridged all of my experience gaps from I started in like grocery stores, retail, collections, and now entrepreneurship is, you know, the relationships that you build with people, because people are, you need help. You can't do everything yourself. You know, I'm good at, you know, building relationships. I'm great at selling a product, but am I good at accounting? No. do I want to spend my time writing a bunch of processes? No. You know, so like making sure that you understand that, you know, we can do a lot by ourselves, but, you know, the way that humans are built, we do a lot better when we have other people to depend on, help, rely on, get information from, bounce ideas off of. Again, going back to the living in a vacuum, if you aren't like receiving information that's different from what your experience is, you're not going to learn and grow. And our one of the things that have really helped the coffee, so Decker Island Coffee is the brand. We have some we have e-commerce. We have clients here in the Tampa area, wholesale and retail clients. But one of the things that have really like helped us is just the relationships that we've made in the 1 year that we've been in business. They've helped us in ways that where we had lots of blind spots in the coffee industry. I love coffee, but I'm not a coffee professional. I don't know anything about the ins and outs of the industry itself, how it works. You know, you can only read so much what happens in practice. You know, you have to kind of rely more on an expert in that industry. And we were lucky enough to have a local importer who is very gracious, and we've worked together with him. We've provided some of our experience from our debt collections days to help them out and get a reciprocal to help us in some of our ways. So like one of the things that has been really great is like, I really like people. I love building new relationships. I love meeting new people and seeing how we can help each other. And that's really been, the biggest help so far in this entrepreneurship experience. 'Cause it's a lot, you know, when you're in a business and working 40 hour a week and you see all the things that are happening, you're like, oh, I can do this. This is easy. Yeah. And then you like put yourself in like, oh my God, there's so many things and I'm only one person and I want to sleep.
Exactly.
So yeah, asking for help.
For people who are tuning in, if they're just super curious and or they want to support you, where's the best place to find the Decker Island Coffee?
DeckerIslandCoffee.com. We have a website where you can order our coffee from. We bought an entire lot of a coffee variety that was processed. So, and I'm going to go into a little bit of coffee geek stuff, right? Okay. So a coffee cherry, how the coffee starts, it grows on like a coffee tree, a bush it looks like, and you have these coffee cherries. It starts off as a fruit. The coffee itself, the bean, is like the little seed inside. So in order to get that seed out of the coffee cherry, you need to peel away that fruit from the coffee bean. It's very difficult. It's a fruit that doesn't want to come off, right? So there's different ways to get it off. And some of these more experimental folks are experimenting with processes that the winemaking industries use, kombucha making industries use. This particular one is a pink bourbon varietal grown in Colombia. The producer is Cafe 1959. And they processed the coffee for 360 hours fermenting with a kombucha SCOBY to help loosen up that fruit off of the bean to help get that off. So you're just left with the bean. So it imparts a little bit of flavor. You have a little bit of a fermented flavor, and some of that bean sticks a little bit more on, or some of the fruit sticks a little bit more onto the bean. So when you roast it, you get a little bit more of caramelization onto the bean, which imparts the flavor. And wow. It's a beautiful coffee. I keep saying this, like every time we buy a bag of coffee, I'm like, this is the best coffee I've ever had. But this one is rare, exotic, and we're the only ones who have it right now.
That is awesome. And it's fascinating, to think about how different that could be in all those parts and how that affects it. And for any, obviously, coffee lovers, coffee snobs, people who like to try different things, make sure to check Decker Island Coffee because that sounds fascinating, especially if you're into that. So, yes. Kelly, thanks again for coming on the podcast and for this extra part here in the after show, the coffee side, the debt relief side, the collection side. Just such a fascinating conversation. So thanks again for the time and the energy and, you know, the stuff that you shared. I appreciate it.
Of course, Jason. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And for everyone watching and listening, like I said, make sure to check out part one because that will make a lot of this make more sense. But there was a lot of great value, whether you're leading a team, whether you're in sales, if you're in debt collections. Basically, everything in life is sales. And like Kelly was just talking about, everything is about relationships. We're a tribal society. And so a lot of the stuff that we talked about, even if you're not in that industry, I promise it applies, even just the part about empathy and emotional intelligence. So make sure to check out part one. And until next time, keep selling with authentic persuasion.